Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to an Empire Podcast interview special. This one was scheduled to be in last week's regular podcast, but I held it back for a couple of reasons. One, it was too long and too good to squeeze in there, and I didn't want to cut too much. Two, I wanted to hold it back for today, Friday, February the 4th, as part of makeup for episode 500 not being here because we haven't recorded episode 500 because episode 500 is a live show that's being recorded tomorrow at King's Place, London. And you can also see a live stream of that if you haven't already got tickets at kingsplace.co.uk. All right, plugging over. Anyway, what this is an incredible interview with the legendary Donnie Yen, and it deserves to be heard, Dagnabbit. Donnie Yen, of course, has been one of the greatest action stars on the planet for decades in classic Chinese movies like Hero and Ip Man, and Hollywood flicks like Blade 2 and Rogue One, a Star Wars story. He is now almost 60, but he isn't slowing down any, and this week sees release on Home Entertainment of his latest movie, Raging Fire, which is, no surprises, filled with cracking action scenes. Amon Warman had the pleasure of sitting down with Donnie Yen on Zoom late last year for an in-depth chat about his career, his philosophy, working with Raging Fire director Benny Chan, who passed away soon after completing the movie, and Yen's upcoming role in John Wick Chapter 4. Got a feeling things might be about to get sticky for Mr. Wick. Here we go. Amon Warman talking to Donnie Yen. Do please enjoy.
We are delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by the star and producer of Raging Fire, Mr. Donnie Yen. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. And yourself?
I'm very good. I really enjoyed watching this film. It's amazing that you're still kicking all the ass you're kicking. I mean, yeah.
You are tougher and tougher, I tell you. That's it's getting tougher. If Daniel Craig is still kicking it. Why not me, right?
You are in better shape than I am, and you're almost 60 and I'm 32. So, you know, just incredible. You've been in this business a long time now. What's your criteria for deciding what films you do, and how did that lead you to Raging Fire?
Well, you're absolutely right. I've been in the business for a long time, and I've made many, many films, like primarily action films. And I'm okay with that. Because in the very beginning, it was never my intention to become an actor. I came to the industry in a very, just by chance, by fate. And I was discovered when I was 19. I don't know if you read some of my previous information. I was discovered by Yu Mo Ping, who discovered Jackie Chan.
Right.
And, you know, the early, when they departed with each other, Yu Mo Ping wanted to find a new kind of a replacement, a new Jackie Chan, so to speak. And he was looking around for a few years and he found me. And I had no idea what I was getting into. And I started making films, and not until many, many years later, I discovered the love of filmmaking. So in the beginning, I had no intention to really dig into, you know, the artistry of movie making. You know, I wanted to be the next Bruce Lee, you know, just because I just felt that I have certain... Very early on, I always feel very confident of my ability as far as my physical prowess, especially cinematic physical performance. I always felt very in tune, and I knew exactly what I needed to do to be the best, right? And I always stayed on top of the game in every one of my film. I was always the hardest on myself, you know. I always wanted to innovate and always want to break grounds in every one of my film. And not only break grounds in the film industry, like in the action film industry around the world, but I wanted to challenge myself and to elevate myself each time in different creativities, right? Not only as the physical elevation, but also in terms of choreography and the styling, and because I've done different type of genre action films, right? From the period films, you know, with the sword, you know, so-called to the West, some wire works, right, to, you know, stand the tip, influential kung fu movies, you know, where a lot of these forms, martial arts, kung fu forms, has been displayed through cinematic technologies, right? And then, of course, like Raging Fire, modern type of films, as you can see, all of these genres have a different type of artistry in there, right? It's different type of storytelling background and, you know, and as well as how do you deliver the physical art, you know, the martial arts, the action, right? That for a long time, I spent decades crafting that and trying to be the top and top everybody else. And then I realized to a point where I lost challenge. I lost stimulation, you know. And I said to myself, you know, what can I do to stimulate myself and to just continue to break through? And then back to the, you know, it was the stupidest questions to ask myself because the answer has always been in front of me, was to be a better actor, to be a better filmmaker overall. And I realized, in order for me to be further influenced, what I needed to do, which was to influence more audience, I needed to be a prominent actor. Then I started to dig into studying drama and finding techniques of trying to connect with audience. Because I feel as a filmmaker, ultimately, you need that connection from the audience. The audience have to embrace you. Now, I'm not talking about necessarily be a better actor because that's perspective. That's very objective, right? Mm-hmm. You know, one person's apples, the other person's orange, right? You can't really say, oh, this actor, the way he acts is better than another. Yes, we have a generalization of who's really a great actor. For example, like De Niro, you know, those kind of name actor. Mm-hmm. Those are generalizing as great actors. But in terms of the appreciation for a good acting is quite objective, in my opinion, right? So, but anyway, so I kind of discovered like what I needed to do to in order to continue to grow as an artist. So, to question, how do I keep kicking and, you know, it's different from a lot of people doesn't understand just because you're a great martial artist doesn't mean you're a great cinematic action kind of hero. Because it's two industry, it's two artistry there, right? We're not a cage fighter, right? We're not a Olympic professional athletes, an NBA player, where youth and burst of that youth of physicality is the criteria of being on top. As a cinematic action, performer. It needs all of that above. You need the physical as well as you need the dramatic. You need to understand film. You understand. You got to know how to act. You got to know your camera. You got to communicate with the constantly. Let me just give you an example. Like music, like a very successful musician or singer. Singer is a good analysis because singers, everybody's, you know, because they're easier to be recognized as. The celebrities, right? Are these top celebrities as singers necessarily the best singer in the world? Maybe they're a great singer, but not necessarily the best singer in the world. But why are they so on top of the game? Why are they so best? Because they are is in an overall artistic achievements. They're better than just a singer because they're a performer. They are, you know, all of what I'm trying to describe, you know. So this is how I craft my art all these years, and I never stop. Like, yes, I might not be able to kick five times in the air, like compared to 20 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm also a much better actor. I'm also understand about how to make a movie. I started early on as a editor and an action choreographer, and then I edit my own films. So I guess that also helps me to dissect what does it take to benefits as an actor, as an action actor, that knowing all fields in the cinema thus comes down to overall improvement, overall progressions. I've been editing, I've been directing, and you know that all that combines create knowledge and create wisdom. So I you know, Raging Fire is a prime example, right? You look at Raging Fire, I don't see there's much difference in terms of having that kind of explosiveness, having that kind of intensity. They're not much different from in what I did films like SPO or Flashpoint some 15 years ago or 20 years ago, right? In fact, in a lot of way, overall way, I look at it as it's even an enhancement. It's even better than the before because my overall as a cinematic performer has gotten better over the years.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And just, you know, you can see it in Raging Fire in a big way because one of the things that I love about the film is that it blurs the line between hero and villain. And the acting that you do with Nicholas Say in particular, it reminded me of Heat in a couple of ways. And the interrogation, the scenes in the interrogation room, for instance. How was it to just, you know, have all those edges to act and to act out?
It was intentional. It was intentional from day one, right? See, a lot of people in the West, they look at, they see my films, they, you know, when they think of Donnie Yen, they think of, oh, Ip Man, he's the Ip Man guy. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a couple of my contemporary movies like Flashpoint or, you know, SPL, you know, I mean, they've probably seen Star Wars or Triple X with Vin Diesel, you know, those couple of films, right? They've only seen these kind of body works. But I've done a lot of different kind of works from TV series to several comedies, you know. I mean, I've done all sorts of different type of performance, style. So for me, it wasn't new for me to play these roles or to have these kind of opportunities, but it was very challenging. Like every actor, you know, every film that you do, every new project that you do, you wanted to keep crafting your stuff, right? So I guess what you saw and what you like, and I assume that you saw the maturity of my years of experience performing in front of the camera, you know, whether I'm fighting or I'm just, you know, in the room doing scenes, you see that maturity and that confidence in it. And I think that transcended into just an overall better performance.
Yeah, no, you definitely see that coming through on screen. I did want to ask about the fighting and the stunt work, which is just incredible. Like I know that you have been working with your stunt coordinator Kenji Tanigaki since like the 90s. How much time do you guys spend, you know, learning all the fights and mapping it all out before you start shooting, and how challenging is it to keep, you know, one-upping yourself and figuring out fresh stuff to do, seeing as you've been doing it for so long?
I'd like to share one more time with, I have to continue to share this kind of philosophy with the fans and with the general public, because for me, I have a different approach. I have different theories of making action movies, right? Of course, in the beginning, if you're an actor, of course, the criteria you need to be semi capable physically, right? But I think there's a lot of different, like I was trying to describe to everybody, that it takes a lot of different kind of skill to come across, not just physicals, right? From the early on, when I was an action director, you're talking about 30 years ago, I started becoming an action director 30 years ago. I discovered the magic of how to make films, how to make physical abilities on film, different techniques. It could be a camera techniques, it could be editing techniques, it could be purely by how you move in front of the camera. But that is another masterclass, right? I'm trying to summarize it into a very short sentence. So basically, a lot of people ask me if I prepare for a film, do I go in how much time do I prepare for a fight scene? Number one, I don't really prepare for fight scenes at all. Not at all. People doesn't believe me because you're supposed to prepare all your life. You know what I'm saying? It's like a musician. You're good musicians. Why do you need to prepare? Like, you, I consider myself as in this field, I'm a like a jazz player, right? I go in on a jam and I expect to work with good people. If they can't keep up with me, then I, you know, then that's a wrong combination, right? So what I do when I get into, before I get into a specific projects or a specific scene that requires a lot of action choreography, I always analyze it by back to the dramatic approach, like every other actor. There's no difference, even if you're making action movies. Well, what is this story about? What is this scene about? What is this character about? You know, you, if I'm Ip Man, the Grandmaster, I go in with different type of attitude. If I'm a raging fire cop, if I walk into the situations, I have a different approach. You know, I might take the situation aggressively. I might try to calm the situation down psychologically, right? So all that, I have to kind of create that elements first, right? Then the choreography for me is just, it's just moving your body and arms. It's just moving body and arms is the, that is just plain note as far as music. Okay. You know, I would have my stunt teams, or if I'm working with other film with other people's stunt team, they would probably give me a some sort of a direction. Okay, Mr. Yen, this is the scene about, you know, you come into the scene A, you do this, right? And these are the suggestions. And my practice is that I would feedback and say, well, maybe he shouldn't do this. He should be doing it. Instead of, you know, maybe he should just throw the table and do this, right? Mm. That is a general direction that I always plan beforehand. So for example, I work with my guys, in this case, working with Kenji. He probably presented me like option 1 and 2 and 3. Here's Mr. N. Donnie, you know, would you like to do this and this? And I look at it and say, oh, I don't like that, right? And we come to an agreement of, okay, approximately that's what this character is going to do. But then when I get to the set, I might change everything completely. It's depending on how I feel with the flow, like a musician. You know, I might not feel it. And it's like, you know what? This doesn't look cool. This doesn't look good. But with all that said and done, obviously you got to have a lot of experience as far as you got to know your film. You got to know your camera angles. You got to know your editing points. You got to know all that given to you in order for you to be free flow like that, just like a good jazz musician. If you don't know your bars, if you don't know your notes, if you don't know the tempo, if you don't know, you can't play the riff, you can't go in and start jamming, right? So that's my philosophy. But that philosophy only applies to, perhaps only apply to me and a very few other action filmmakers that exist. Most people, they look at this as a complete different type of arts, you know? So for them, like, for example, you read about a lot of actors in Hollywood, they will spend months in training, which is great because they do need the training. But realistically, how are you going to, you know, even if I put an actor to train 1 year, he will never be that masterful of the stuff that they present on film, right? So it's going to be, it's very difficult with a different type of actor, you know. Martial art actor always have the advantage because they spend all their life practicing their arts, right? I'm talking about as far as the physical aspects of it. Of course, the acting part of it plays, if not more important, equally important, you know, in order for you to have a package, the whole package, as an influential action actor, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. One thing you mentioned there was character through action. And I think that's something that Raging Fire does really, really well. There's a scene where your character is fighting someone and it goes all the way down to the sewers. And in that moment, sort of like a fall from grace thing. I mean, is that something you're always sort of conscious about? How is this woman, the character?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So let me try to break it down, make a long story short, and how that creation came about, right?
Yeah.
It started off with me and Benny Chan, the director. We would talk through scenes like, okay, this is the story. And, you know, honestly speaking, The Raging Fire is not a story that you've never seen before. It's quite standardized, like generic kind of cop, good cop versus bad cop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Benny Chen wanted to pay tribute to, like, absolutely right. You're right. The heat. That's why we made that, specifically made those two scenes. One is in that interrogation room, and the other one is, you know, shootout in the middle of the street, because he loved heat and he always wanted to do something like that. So it was during our very, when we were crafting the story, we come up with a story, we would have all these creative discussion that something that he wanted to do and wanted to inject it into the story. And for me, throughout the process of developing the story, images would started to create on my head. Oh, okay. If this character, you know, what would he do if he would, because at the end of the day, when you watch movies, right, what is about making the magic of movies, right? You have a story. A story is about, you have, and the main characters, he would run into problems, right? And he would resolve these problems. And throughout resolving the problems, he is whether a revenge full experience or redemption experience of a successful film or successful character get you invested with your own emotion. You started to like this guy and you start following his path. You start cheering for him. That's the ultimate goal every time I make my action, is that if I can get you to cheer for me, what doesn't matter what I do, you're going to cheer for me. It could be I could take it on 10 people, or just have thrown a punch, or even if I get punched, you're going to feel bad for me. So I'll give you another example. When I did Ip Man, you know, I don't know if you recall Ip Man 1, when I took on the 10 karate guys, people were cheering in the theaters in Asia. I think in the rest of the world too. When they saw that scene, people were standing up, applauding and clapping their hands, because we were very successfully got the audience to emotionally connected and attached to me. So therefore, it's like when you recall, when you watch Bruce Lee's movies in the old days, right? When Bruce Lee start throwing his kick and throwing that nunchuck out, you start cheering for him. You say, yeah, go for it. Kind of like what you watch in the modern, decades of classic movies from the Hollywood, like Rocky. When we watch Rocky, you cheer. You know, it's like, oh, wow, this, you know, that is a successful example. So what I do is I go through this kind of process as we creating the story, and these imageries will, through experience and of course, and through discussion with my director and, you know, back and forth, I might change my mind and back and forth and say, oh, you know what? What if this character, he goes into certain situations, and in our case, he went into this, you know, the sewage, and that, oh, you give him all these problems, you know, wouldn't that create some sort of I guess you take the audience into it, and not only a visual experience, but also an emotional experience. So to give you the answer, yes, every look, all of these kind of set pieces were thought out right before we got into creating it. Of course, then once we lock it down, then we start building those certain sets, and then. The choreography is the last thing that I do. I normally choreograph when I'm on a set, because I know it doesn't make sense to a lot of Hollywood producers, and they probably don't want to hear it because they think, well, how are you going to choreograph something, right? Doesn't the crew and the cameraman and everybody else can't follow you? Yeah, you know, you might run into a problem like that, but then you know what? You want the best of that creativity, having that free and having that kind of instinct, kind of impulsive emotion that the actor, in this case me, needs to be spontaneously engaged at the moment. It's like when you're acting, that moment, once you reach that moment, everything becomes magic. Same with the action. But let me finish it off with the crew and everybody else being able to follow up. Then you know what? You have a good team. These teams are experienced team who dealt with these kind of films. And better yet, if they work with you, in my case, you know, we all work together, you know, the whole Hong Kong teams, you know, we all worked with it in previous. So we know each other's language. Mm-hmm. Back to the music analysis, right? If everybody is good musicians and they know each other's work, they come in and start playing the band, and you create sweet music.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask about Benny Chan, who's sadly no longer with us. The film is rightfully dedicated to him. And I know that you had a great working relationship with him. What will you miss most about making movies with him?
He's just a beautiful man. You know, this guy's, I worked with so many producers and directors before, but he's one of those coolest cat where he's always smiling. It doesn't matter how stressful the set is. I mean, shooting in action films, not easy. You know, it's not you shooting a romantic, dinner scenes and sweet talk with each other between actors, you know, dress fine with your nice clothes, wardrobes. And I like that, you know, we'd be put in like that scene in the sewage, in the dirt, rolling around, get banged up. A lot of times you get hurt constantly under that kind of stressful territory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let alone action movie. Shooting action movie in Hong Kong, that's even worse. Because we are the pinnacle of making these kind of films in many ways. So we have certain standard. And usually a Hong Kong movie is the budget is lower, the tighter. Well, less time. The weather's hot. We have a lot of people in the city. It's just every environment can't give you a joyride, you know, through the experience. But Benny Chan, he always come in with a smile. I never hardly see him get pissed off, you know? Doesn't matter. Even if he's yelling at you or yelling at the crew or whoever, the actor, maybe he's not happy with something. He's always, the way he deliver his emotion is through a smile. You know, even he'd be criticizing you, he'd be smiling and he criticizes with his smile. I mean, that's the kind of person he is, you know? So I miss that kind of positivity, you know? When I work with him, he's always positive. You know, he always, because I worked with him 20-something years ago. We did a TV series together, right? Mm-hmm. And we did two TV series together. So we spent a lot of time decades ago. It was unfortunately that I never got to work with him until 20 years later. And this is the first time we worked in a movie together. I mean, we were, what we did before was TV series, but we had spent many, many months together doing those TV series, right? And I recalled him never changed a bit. He was always remained that kind of happy, positive, and courageous kind of filmmaker. Like, he never give up his idea. Like, he and I were talking, and we were thinking of it. We think of a concept. Oh, you know, this is cool. Without any preparation, you know, we might change the whole scene. Say, you know, let's do it. We could do it. Like, always having that kind of optimistic approach in whatever we face. You know, it could be the most difficult situations, but he's always have that kind of attitude. So that's what I miss about him the most.
Yeah, I love that. Like, the final sort of behind the scenes footage at the start of the credits is really lovely too. I love seeing that. I wanted to quickly ask you about a couple of your Western films, because I loved your performance in Rogue One. Do you get many people coming up to you and saying, "I am one with the Force" still? Because that's a very popular line with fans.
I guess it's such a iconic movie, right? Star Wars, the whole franchise is so iconic. And I was very lucky. Was given that role, and that role was given that line. So everything kind of worked out. So yeah, I mean, from the beginning, I wasn't sure. I mean, honestly, I mean, I like Star Wars, but I'm not a crazy fan of this whole. I never follow up in my last few decades, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad I did. You know, I did the film because it's so many. Everybody's just still coming up to me and just so excited about the film and my role in the lines, and they repeat my lines. And so, yeah. sometimes that's very rewarding. You know, sometimes you get into a film where you don't know what to expect. I didn't know what to expect, right? So and it turned out to be so overwhelmingly successful.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm also very excited that you're going to be in John Wick 4 because I absolutely love that franchise. And you recently described it as the best experience of any American movie you've been in. Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah. Well, number one, I even though I only made very few American movies, and there's a reason why I only made a few because, I mean, honestly speaking, most of the past experience wasn't the most memorable experience. You know, it was different. I guess we have different culture. I'm not talking about ethnic culture. I'm talking about working culture. You know, the way we make films, the way I make films is very, 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 you know, people are very passionate and very, how would I say it? It's real, you know, it's straight up and organic. So I'm not saying that there's no different, there's a different type of techniques in Hollywood, but maybe in that industry, the infrastructure of that industry is so much more, how would I say, corporate. Everything is corporate, you know? Everything has to come, and then sometimes, which is great, that's why the industry created the industry. However, sometimes in the course of these corporate approach, arts, the true art, artistic creation get lost in between. You know what I'm saying? Everything becomes a bit of too calculated, you know? So throughout my experience, working in Hong Kong or working in different, in my industry, and I just find it's different. It's a lot more, how would I say? There's a lot less politics. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned down a lot of roles until I was invited to do John Wick. And I was a little bit concerned. And I raised my concern to the John Wick's producer as well as Chad, you know, the director. And they made me very comfortable and kind of convinced me. So I went and they proved me right.
Yeah, that's awesome. I in prepping for this interview, I saw a picture of you and Keanu posing together on like a red carpet, which is very, very cool. That was like years ago, and now you're working on a film together. Have you guys kept in touch over the years?
No, we have not. We have not, because last time I was one of the charity, how would I call it? I was the host, and we invited a special guest, and he was the special guest. And you know, sometimes when you meet each other in an event, it's really hard to get to know each other, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because there's so many people around, there's press, and it's hard to spend that kind of quality time. And this time we really connected. And I say it again, you know, the guy is just genuinely a good dude. He's just a kind-hearted. It's hard to find, you know. It's hard to find in any industry this type of the quality in a man, you know. Got a big heart, and both a genuine, humbled, as much as his talent. He's talented as well, so. It's hard to find these kind of artists these days.
I agree. Can we expect the Donnie Yen versus Keanu Reeves fight at some point?
Well, I'm not going to spoil the plot. I mean, I think I've teased enough, dropped some teases, you know, on my social media to get everybody excited. And there were a little bit of tease, but it was not my intention, you know. I just genuinely want to share my joy working in that film and spending time with those dudes, you know, with those guys, right? So that's what I do. My social media, honestly, I drop stuff in my social media because I'm generally a happy person. and positive person. I just like to share my joy through my social media, you know. It could be a goofy thing or it could be an experience on a set, right? But, you know, back to John Wick, you know, I mean, it was a great experience, you know. I mean, even though I spent 4 months away from my family, that was tough. That was the only toughest part, right? It's away from my family. And plus this whole quarantine. In fact, I'm still in quarantine speaking with you.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
Getting out tomorrow. Yeah. This is my 20th day. I spent 21 days in a hotel. I mean, 2 months in Berlin and 2 months in Paris. I had a wonderful time.
Amazing. Well, I am off to go and look at your social medias to see if I can find some John Wick clues. But Donnie Yen, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And that was Donnie Yen talking to Amon Warman. And don't forget that Raging Fire is out now on DVD, Blu-ray, and digital. Check it out, folks. And that is it for this Empire Podcast interview special. As ever, except for today, the regular podcast is out every single Friday, as I say, with the exception of this weekend, as that's when we're putting on our epic live show at King's Place, London, to mark the 500th episode of the podcast. I know, I can't believe it either. I didn't give us more than 6 months. You can still buy streaming passes for that. The main show is sold out. You can come along if you fancy, if you're listening to this and you fancy coming along to the Great Big Empire podcast quiz and the afternoon session, which includes a live ranking of Nicolas Cage movies and a live spoiler special dedicated to Hot Fuzz with some very special guests. You can still buy some tickets for those, I believe, at kingsplace.co.uk, and you can buy a streaming pass for the evening show, the main show, episode 500 itself, with a cavalcade of guests that will knock your socks off. kingsplace.co.uk. Anyway, enough of the shameless plug-in, folks. This is me trying to say goodbye. Keep them peeled for more interview specials. In fact, there is one just around the corner. You'll know them when you see them. And don't forget to check out the regular podcast every Friday from next week. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.